So I think we've been really lucky today because oftentimes I feel like these sessions, the four or five, don't link very well together, and these could not be more beautifully matched. I think we've all taken a family systems perspective. We've all taken a dyadic perspective for the most part, and so this work continues in the line of the three presentations beforehand. This was work that I did for my dissertation. I have no personal relationships to disclose. I do want to say that the work was funded by a training grant from the National Institute of Mental Health, and that was specifically to collect data from African-American mother-daughter dyads, and then a second grant from the Center for AIDS Research at the University of Pennsylvania allowed to expand to Hispanic families. I think the difference between some of the statistics that I'm reporting here and what you've heard in the last three presentations is that pregnancy is not the focus. It's just risk engagement in general. But we do know that adolescents, it's fairly normed at this point to be having sex. I mean, 75% report sex before age 18, 20% before 15. Many folks have multiple partners, which increases their risk for negative outcomes. Most teens report inconsistent condom use, high rates of teen pregnancy. And then, as we know, there's significant disparities between race and gender. This work that I'm presenting, so I too looked at communication and monitoring, which, you know, Dr. Aspey talked about as the most kind of salient aspects of youth assets. And communication is important for several reasons. One is that it really frames risk engagement and family value and other areas for youth. Most often parents are talking about puberty, right? Your period, most often for girls, ejaculation for boys. Abstinence and sexual values come second. If you get past the first one, then abstinence and sexual values come second, then birth control, then relationship issues, and then HIV, which is kind of interesting. And sometimes HIV will creep up before relationship issues. But still, HIV becomes one that's kind of least discussed. But we know communication is good. It's correlated with attitudes about abstinence, intentions to abstain, and use of birth control. For HIV-positive mothers, so this work is looking at differences between HIV-positive and negative mothers, it's been found that these moms communicate more often and more frequently their rate of conversations. And the difference is, the importance of frequency is this repetition of messages, right? So saying something once is great, but saying it over and over again is really what makes it become part of your attitude and part of your normed belief. So just a little more in terms of why youth of HIV-positive parents have been found to be at higher risk, and that is most are from single-parent households, generally female-headed, and are often exposed at an early age to the same factors that place their moms at risk for HIV infection. And this is including, so they're living in the same communities, which generally have high density of HIV, right? If we look by zip code, high rates of substance use, community violence, poor education systems, lack of jobs. One study found that daughters of HIV-positive mothers were 50%, had initiated sex at a rate of 50%, by age of 14, and 70% were reporting unprotected sex. And then family roles are the last issue with HIV-infected families, which wouldn't differ if you were talking about families that have a parent with severe mental illness, families that have a parent that has an ongoing and kind of detrimental substance use issue. And that is that family roles are reconfigured. So these kids are taking on a more adult role in general than youth their same age. And what tends to come with taking an adult role is the belief that you're grown, right? I'm grown, I make my own decisions. I know best what's good for me. So the aims of the study, and this, I'm presenting the quantitative piece. This was a mixed method study, so focus groups were done first. But the goals of this were to assess the relationship between maternal HIV status, parent-teen sexual risk communication, and daughter's HIV sexual risk beliefs and intentions, and to examine whether mother's influence behaviors, which would be communication, mediated the relationship between serostatus and beliefs. So like the group, I'm just throwing the theory out because we've talked around it, but nobody talked about it. So right, all this work is going beyond this idea of the individual and looking at a family model of behavior change. I used a family expansion of the theory of planned behavior. And so really what that is saying is that the theory of planned behavior starts here, right? But what that's saying is that the parent beliefs influence the parent's behaviors, and inherently those behaviors then influence the beliefs of the children and their intention and their behaviors. And so what I added onto it was this HIV serostatus, which I was predicting would influence beliefs. Again, it was a mixed method study. This is just the survey results. Folks that were self-identified as African American or Hispanic, and the term as a native Californian and now back in California, the term Hispanic always seems very off. But when you're in the Northeast, that is the normed terminology. So if anybody's going to ask me why I didn't use Latino, that is the reason. All had to be identified as female. This was mother-daughter dyads. Moms had to have a diagnosis of HIV negative or HIV symptomatic or have AIDS. And we excluded those who were HIV asymptomatic because we didn't know that there would be enough difference between those who were HIV negative and those who didn't have any symptoms. And you had to have a mother with one of those diagnoses. And the daughter needed to be living with the mom at least 50% of the time, right? To influence behavior, especially communication. If you're not living with somebody, you're not potentially getting that level of interaction, and then English speaking. So there's a laundry list of the stuff that was collected. All daughters were HIV negative, and that was for several reasons. A big reason being being the NIH, all right? They didn't want us to ask kids about their HIV serostatus. Being that it was that it should be protected, but also this idea that we wanted to kids that are HIV infected are working within different systems, so they're being exposed to different. They have different access to medical health care. They have different access to youth groups and support systems, which might influence their behavior outside of the parent group. So, we were looking at daughters who were HIV negative, and I wanted to also say that most of these parent-child were biological, but some of them were grandparents and who were raising grandkids, and that was because mom was no longer alive. So, but grandma was HIV infected as well. So, anyways, here's a laundry list of folks stuff that was collected. The total sample ended up at 175 dyads, and this data was all collected from folks in Philadelphia, Newark, New Jersey, and New York City. All which have the ethnic, what HIV looks like in those cities is very similar. And socioeconomically, the groups had much similarity. Mean age of the adult was almost 41 years. 82% were African American. At least for Philadelphia, this is not kind of this wasn't an astounding statistic to find less Hispanics than there were African Americans. 61% were high school graduates, which was slightly skewed by the HIV negative folks. And 47% were employed. Almost 40% of the group had HIV or AIDS. And just a few differences by serostatus, and I don't think any of this is a big surprise. HIV positive women were more likely to be African American, more likely to have a lower level of education. They were less likely to be employed, and they were more likely to report a history of marijuana, cocaine use, and heroin use. They also reported a younger age of first sex. Now that could be very variable, but it just happens within this group that was what they looked like. Mean age of the daughters was almost 16 years. Again, most of them were African American. 91% were in school. And that's important because the age range was 14 to 18, so there was some folks that were out and some folks who just were no longer attending, but we do know from nationally representative data that in school and out of school youth have differences. There's not enough data in this data set to look at differences by whether they're in school or not, but it's important. 42% reported ever having had sex. Of those who had reported having had sex, 71% reported condom use at first sex and 63% at last sex. So the fact that 30% are not using a condom the first time they have sex is, it's still scary, right? We talk about all this all the time, and we feel like we're giving the same message over and over, but the statistics aren't changing, and that's why you keep hearing it. Again, differences by maternal HIV status. So these young women were more likely to have a father who was HIV infected, other family members who were HIV infected, and family friends who were HIV infected. They were more likely to report ever having had sex, right? Not what you would hope to find from this group. More likely to have used marijuana, less likely to report a condom use at first sex. But they were more likely to report condom use at last sex. So that was the one bright hope. So there basically blows out all of my hypotheses, right? I did put the information about knowing people other than your mom, because there has been other data, thank you, that have looked at how just knowing somebody in general, whether that influences your choices. So parent-child communication did not differ by HIV status. The four variables, this is multivariate analysis, that influenced communication were your beliefs, your attitudes about communication and the effectiveness of it, whether your control beliefs, so whether or not you felt like you were able to have this kind of communication, the skills to do it, relationship satisfaction, which is really kind of, to me, very salient. So how well you, the teen, said the relationship with mom was, how much they liked it, satisfied with it, and adolescent age, which is of, you know, kind of well understood, right? The older you are, the more likely you are to have sex, and the more likely you were to have been communicated with the older you were. Associated with intention to abstain was, again, age, so younger you were, the more likely you were to abstain. Maternal physical symptoms, so moms who had more symptoms had kids that were engaging in less sex, and adolescent depression. And I just wanted to say that although it wasn't significant, this wasn't a huge sample, so, but communication was trending towards significance at 0.06. And then quickly associated with behavioral beliefs or adolescents' attitudes was, again, their age, mom's sero status, so that finally then shows up as something as important. Depression, normative beliefs, so right, that's your peer beliefs, what's normed in your peer groups, and communication. So quickly, relationship satisfaction was an important factor in communication. So how teens rate their relationship with their parent may then influence what they hear from their parent. And how much they're engaging with their parent, right? So that communication has to happen at some point, and we know that this communication tends to happen around what we call teachable moments, right? So you saw something on TV, a movie, in passing, child is coming home telling a story, and you use it as your opportunity to engage them in this dialogue. So that relationship satisfaction becomes an area of potential, you know, building in terms of change we can make with families. Also important were how mothers felt about communication and how well they thought they could do it. So skills, right? This is part of what we do well as public health practitioners, is skill building. And so parents just need to know how to do it. And most often parents say, what do I do at what age? That's the biggest, you know, when's too early, when's too late? And yeah, I just wanted to say that one possible explanation for not finding differences by sero status is two things. One is that parents in either group, whether or not they're HIV infected, could just say, think this is an important thing to do. And rates of communication were reported pretty high. The other thing is that these groups, in terms of control factors, were not very different, right? So I was trying to control for socioeconomic status. We were controlling, you know, for race and ethnicity in terms of trying to get as much concordance. Well, that makes the groups then not so different, and that might be part of what we're seeing. So it might be that the folks that are HIV negative are like that by chance. You know, the more chance comes in. It's that they're within the same communities. So the positive things, though, so we did see condom use at last sex going up among daughters of HIV-positive parents and things. And so maybe it's that adolescent, and they had, their beliefs were higher, right? Their attitudes towards engagement or non-engagement and risky behaviors. And so that maybe HIV-positive moms These kids may have more realistic expectations or potential views of the negative outcomes of sex. They're living with a mom who's experiencing this negative outcome. And then also, you know, seeing symptoms, attending appointments with mom, you know, having to seek treatment with her may also be protective in terms of youth beliefs. The limitations, this was a convenient sample. For those of you who have done dissertations or dissertating, you know, you stomp all you want. It's cross-sectional. It was regional. It's a, you know, limited sample size. And again, this was a paper and pencil survey. The youth and the parent was separated, but they were in the same space, and it wasn't, you know, in a CASE. So social desirability, you do have to, you know, factor in. So what do we do next? You know, people have talked about this kind of structural. So this idea of kind of bringing it, this work moves it to the family, but it didn't include community issues, which may be actually more salient or as salient or maybe what's most important in terms of the influence of communication and the role of family within this risk reduction potential. And so not accounting for neighborhood structure and other things. Particularly the access and availability of condoms, I think, which hasn't been talked about yet today, but I think is important. So we can, you know, you can give a message till kingdom come, but if there's not access and availability to do what needs to be done, then the likelihood of doing it is nil. In terms of kind of behavioral implications, I think the increase in relationship satisfaction, resources and support to women to increase self-efficacy related to communication, again, telling parents, I hear my kid in the back, that repetition of messages is really important, and tools for moderating relationship power, because kids don't know how to say no unless they're taught how to say no. So, but a lot of adults don't know how to do that either, right? So it becomes hard. And lastly, kind of some clinical implications. Just increasing open and honest communication. I think people are really uncomfortable talking about sex, and so getting people comfortable with saying penis and vagina becomes, like, it sounds small, but it's a major step for a lot of families. Having families share values and expectations, particularly around abstinence and safer sex. You know, we know that, as Dr. Espy said, you know, when a youth knows that this is what's important to my family and these are the expectations of my family, then they are more likely to do it. And last, access to age-appropriate materials and facilitating conversations around disclosure, given that HIV status does have some influence on beliefs. And so, if you guys have any questions, I know, isn't it fun to always have something to look at? Any? Nothing, I was so informative, there's no questions. Yes, in the back. Yeah, no? You were just rubbing your head. Nothing? Okay. Well, if anybody thinks of anything, they, you know, I will be around. But thank you for your time.